This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Brennan Marks coming up here in about 15 minutes. Covers Duke, covers North Carolina, and an assortment of other things. We'll get into it with him. And, of course, Roddy Jones rocking and rolling, doing his thing at 9:30. And we'll get you up to speed. But speaking of Georgia Tech, Wes, last night was some kind of game. It had, we said earlier, it had a little bit of everything from start to finish and anything in between, quite frankly. It was crazy.
Started from the first snap, didn't it? From scrimmage and went all the way to the post-game handshake. Yeah. Pittsburgh closes the season. They win 34-20 last night on Grant Field at Bobby Dodd Stadium in Atlanta. Thursday night under the lights, kind of the way Georgia Tech invented the concept back in the late 80s, believe it or not. The Jackets were one of the first schools ever to play on Thursday night at home. And Vincent Davis had a whale of a night. No two ways about it. 25 carries, 247 yards. And just a reminder here, his career high in rushing was eclipsed on the first carry of the game. He had 69 last year in the Quick Lane Bowl against Eastern Michigan. Kenny Pickett, if this is it, 17-34, 196, a touchdown, an interception, and also scored on the ground. He's going to be a topic for down the road next week. Pack on this show about guys who potentially we could see return in 2021, but we'll talk about that down the road. Georgia Tech finishes 2-4 at home. The other three losses were to teams that were ranked, Central Florida, Clemson, and Notre Dame at the time of the game. I would say this, Jeff Collins still has a game at Miami next Saturday. Jackets are better. It may end up being the same number of wins, Pack, but the Jackets are a better football team this year than they were a year ago when the season closed, for sure.
Not even close. That's not even open for debate. And we even said, I think, before the season started, forget wins and losses. They will be an improved team, right. And they are. And they've got their star at quarterback and running back for the next couple of years, which is good. The recruiting continues to improve as well. So, you're disappointed. Hey, you want to be in bowls, all that stuff. I get all that. You knew this was going to be an interesting transformation. It has been, but there's no question Georgia Tech much better right now than they were this time a year ago. And I want to go back real quick to one other thing you said, Wes, regarding Kenny Pickett. He passed Dan Marino in total yards last night at Pitt. And you know what? Mm-hmm. He has put in the time. He's had a tough year in terms of the injuries in the middle of the season and came back. Pitt's a much different team when he's back there slinging it. And when they can run it like they did last night for 317 yards, they're a pretty good group because that defense is always going to be salty despite guys opting out and so forth. So just a couple tidbits there. But there's no doubt, congrats to Pitt for finishing all 11 games, going 6-5, given the fact that October was really a lost month for them. And I'll still go back to the game you covered and called. I thought the NC State loss changed their entire direction for the whole year. And I'm not saying that one game that caused two or three or four – but that Pitt schedule, the way this thing laid out, you knew it was going to be tougher when it got retweaked, but you also knew it was front-loaded with home games to get off to a good start. That NC State game was the last, I think, of four straight home games. And the way they lost it and the way NC State won, to be honest with you, it was kind of a catalyst for the Wolfpack and kind of a detriment to Pitt. Not that 6-5, you go, oh, what a bummer. Pitt had the potential to have a really spectacular year, but October sidetracked them. And NC State really kind of started that, as far as I'm concerned. But that was the game you called, which I still thought was one of the best games of the year in the ACC.
The ball game last night in Atlanta had a little bit of everything, as Pac said, from start to finish. Got a little edgy.
No,
chippy,
definitely.
Edgy, yeah.
Definitely.
Had some you know, unnecessary roughness, some unsportsmanlike conducts. We had a little... other team playing in the other guy's bench area. We had JOPs. We had some other stuff that was happening last night. Yeah. So, we had some – while we had an interesting ball game, exciting plays both sides, we had teams that were desperate to win. And, had a little bit of this going on. Same – Pitt was playing over in Georgia Tech's bench. Georgia Tech would go every once in a while over to Pitt's bench and – after the game, we had that. Oh, boy. Eesh. Okay. So let's go to the 21st century COVID-based Zoom pressers And we will start with the head coach of the Panthers.
You know, I just said, hey, you got a great team. And he said, that's, you know, baloney, I guess, and nice words and walked off. I don't know. I thought it was a good game.
To be honest with you, I was focused on getting our guys to our band to celebrate. There were some things throughout the game that got chippy, and I was just making sure that I wanted to get to my guys. So if I came across any type of way, really had no intention of that. I'm just so focused on our team, so focused on making sure that we go and celebrate with our band that does so much for us and for our program. And so that's one of the traditions that we have, getting to the band and celebrate, or not celebrating, but showing respect to our band. And I just wanted to make sure that, you know, we did that. So I don't even remember, to be honest with you. I apologize.
You like that line, Wes? But Narduzzi wasn't done. He goes to Twitter before he leaves town, heading back to Pittsburgh, and says, cold showers in Georgia again. Look at that. That's unbelievable. Hey. It'll all work out.
Hey, good to see y'all. Yeah, cops got along. Good to see the police are still
everybody's
friends.
Shaking hands except the coaches. Hey. This will die down, but I'm telling you, for a Thursday night, if you were not entertained with that one, don't know if I can help you. That, like you said, we had personal fouls roughing the quarterback. We had a little bit of everything. We had electrical outlets going out, and you know, for crying out loud, what else you want? What else you want? Game had everything.
All right, I got to tell you now, we're going to run Vincent Davis only because Abby Labar, who was working sidelines last night on the RSN package, teed Vincent Davis right up.
Well, you left it all out on the line here today. What do you credit that to? How are you guys going to celebrate tonight?
Oh, we finna get lit. We can't get too lit, though, because, you know, we got to quarantine all that. Now. You feel me? But we finna get lit tonight. Yeah. All on the plane, we getting lit.
Getting lit tonight. Good for those guys. I told you. I mean, they've been all these guys. You play 11 games this year, you have earned the right to get lit on a plane. I can assure you.
Yes.
It has been a grinder, boys.
No question.
Crazy. What a game.
No question.
What a Thursday night game.
Congratulations. Yeah. I like Thursday night games when we get, you know, full 60 minutes and big plays and, you know, a little more than you normally settle in for. Congratulations to Pittsburgh, one of four schools to play the 11 games. BC, Pitt, NC State, Syracuse, Duke, and Carolina, by the way, can reach that this weekend as well. So that's an accomplishment, given the landscape they've tried to play college football.
Question.
Mentioning BC here, Pac.
Important story.
Yesterday afternoon, Jeff Hafley and athletics director Pat Kraft met with media. Boston College is going to pass on a postseason date in the 2020 season. They finished last week with the loss at Charlottesville to go 6-5. Most ACC wins, as you see, in 11 years. And, Mark, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not terribly surprised by this, given how intense it's been, especially for Boston College in this fall campaign.
One positive test in 9,000. They have been really the premier school in college athletics in terms of that number. They get all 11 games in. Jeff Hafley, incredible job in year one. Jurkovic was tremendous too. Winning season. And I thought it was the thing that jumped out at me the most was the way Hafley had his team captain announce it to his team, what they were going to do, and the response was everybody roared in approval, which should tell you something that, hey, it has been such a crazy journey that just to reach the finish line, if you're good, hey, we're all good. And somebody was going to be first with this announcement. It just so happened to be Boston College, and since we cover the ACC, it needs to be mentioned. But I will be stunned if they're the only one. Stunned. If they're the only one. I just think that given where we are, what you saw with Mike Krzyzewski already talking about his team after 2 weeks of hoops, they just need a break. Can you imagine playing 9 consecutive games? And then you get a break and then we're going to go play again. And hey, we're good. You know, we're satisfied with the accomplishment of playing 11 games and having a season in which you had a winning record. Good for BC. If that's what they want to do, more power to them. But I don't think they'll be the only one that says that. I don't.
Yeah. One of the notes, and you talked about this, the isolation. I think one of the things we're hearing, not only in the Duke decision to waive off the non-conference, the other aspect of this is, and Matthew Hurt's dad spoke to a newspaper about this in the Duke decision, and I'm guessing it falls under the same category of Boston College. The isolation from friends and family has probably been more than people realize.
No question.
You know, imagine you haven't seen any of your friends, you haven't been around any of your family if you're a Boston College football player. Now, the campus at Chestnut Hill invites that kind of isolation because of the way the university or the college has taken the approach here with their protocols pack. But on the whole, you certainly got to respect the young people's decision here. Bowl game, yeah. But a bowl game this year is not going to be the bowl game of yesteryear. The bowl game this year, you might fly in day before, Mark. Maybe, I'm guessing. I would say hours, but I don't know how that works. And really, the bowl experience is nowhere near what it would normally be. Can't be. That's not the dynamic they're looking for.
Exactly. And, you know, it always used to be, well, you get the additional 15 practices. Well, that's right now about the last thing somebody wants to go through with what they've been through. So really, in some respects, it's almost counter to what you would ever think of as a bowl trip. Hey, friends, family going to be there? Not necessarily. Gasparilla Bowl, let's go. Well, how about we just stay home for the holidays? So that's where it is. And like I said, if Boston College is the only school that makes that announcement, I will be stunned. I just assumed it was coming from somebody somewhere, sometime. Didn't know where. But when I saw that yesterday with BC, I'm like, hey, get ready for it. Because I think there's going to be many more that kind of feel the same way that, hey, we've kind of reached the finish line and we just need a break.
Yeah, well, get ready. I think you're right, and I think there's more to come. And remember, everybody is technically eligible for a bowl.
No, even win, LSU. No. Oh, so, I take that back. They're self-imposed. They're not.
No, they've decided they're not going to.
I forgot. Take that back. Sorry, LSU. Sorry about that. I'm still laughing at that.
Sorry.
Great sense of humor you do. Amazing.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
We've had games postponed or canceled, and we took the initiative to say we're not going to play any more non-conference games. And the other thing we said is, you know, we're going to let our kids go home for Christmas. Now, that might not be Christmas Day, but they're going to be home for 4 or 5 days. They need a break, mental health-wise. So that's what we're doing. Whatever anyone else does, we'll, you know, that'll be good. But I would like to see there have more dialogue about it and not just say we're going to plow through.
Packer and Durham, of course, at Coach K with Basketball and Beyond, which you can hear Thursday nights, by the way, 6 p.m. Eastern time. If he had a better lead into that show would be even more successful. But you can check it out on SiriusXM Channel 84. Brendan Marks from The Athletic now joins us. Curious to get his take on a number of different topics here. I think we've got Brendan. Brendan, good morning. How you doing? There he is.
Good morning. Hey, guys. Good morning. Good to talk to you.
Same. It's always good to talk to you. There's always something to talk about, and it has certainly been interesting with what we've seen on the floor and maybe even more specifically away from the floor this week at coming out of Duke.
Yeah, you know, obviously Coach K's comments have sort of snowballed and taken on a whole life of their own, right, as they always tend to do. So I think the most interesting thing that's gone on this week, and there's so much talk about, is Coach K advocating for the end of the season, all that. I think the one thing that we got to remember before we start talking about any of this is not like he just shot this off the hip. You know, this was not completely unprompted. This was him specifically addressing a question posed to him in a post-game press conference after Duke lost to Illinois. So just a little bit of context there, but I think people should remember he's not just blanketly, proudly advocating for this. He was specifically asked to respond to it, and so he did.
Brendan, I just said in the last segment, I know you talked to Matthew Hurt's dad for an article you posted on The Athletic, and I think that that context of what he talked about with what a lot of student athletes at Duke have been through. And as I said earlier, everybody's got a different plan and a different process for the way they're handling student athletes. Duke's has been as intense and as cautionary as anybody that I've seen around the country. And I'm not around comparing blueprints here, but it seems like the Blue Devils and the Duke University itself have really done an inclusive job of keeping student athletes and their student body, period, out of harm's way as much as possible from the coronavirus.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one thing that we all should keep in mind when we're talking about this is back in March, when this thing first onset, Duke was the first school, and then shortly followed thereafter by Kansas, to say, we're not playing in the postseason. You know, we're pausing activities. That's what's best for us. And they did that despite having a team that I think many people looked at probably would have been like a 2 seed or so, had a very realistic chance at making national title run. So this is not something that is a recent development. This has been something that has been key to the university at the highest levels, from the athletic director to the president. I mean, everyone at the university has gone out of their way to be as safe and as adherent to protocol as possible. You know, I live 10 minutes from Duke's campus. I used to go and run there. You can't even step foot on Duke's campus anymore, even if it's outside. I mean, it is that stringent. It is that strict. And I just think it's really important that when we're talking about this coming about now, it's not because, oh, Coach K lost 2 games. This has been their protocol for the entire, you know, course of the pandemic, really. And over the summer, when the ACC cleared other schools to come back and begin voluntary workouts in the beginning of June, Duke opted not to. Duke opted to wait until August to do that, to make sure that their protocols were ironed out properly, as Matthew Hurt's father told me. So I think this is something that it's really been an 8-month-long process, not something that happened in the course of 8 hours or so. So people just need to remember that fact.
Brendan, I think there's another story within the story, too. And we talked about this yesterday on the show. Coach K has also been really consistent about college basketball. Forget the pandemic a second, but having somebody in charge of college basketball. And given his ties to the NBA, and I mentioned, not to get on the high horse here, but doing a SiriusXM town hall last summer, summer of 19, with Adam Silver, Mike Krzyzewski, and to hear those two guys lay out, hey, here are some of the issues that we have. You know, when the NBA wants a question about college basketball, who do they call? And Kay talked about it at length, too. He's been banging this drum for a long time. And when you hear the answer to that question that you talked about in that press conference that was posed to him, it kind of talked about direction of college basketball, and I'll lump in the pandemic and how we're addressing this. So I think there's really kind of two storylines that he's kind of not necessarily lumped in together, but he answered the question together. And I think folks need to understand that you got to kind of separate these a little bit, because there's two different stories here that are being told.
There are. And I think that's a really good point that you bring up. You know, this is something where, you know, again, I think the most recent example is probably going back to March. You know, ideally, Duke isn't the one who has to make that call. Ideally, Duke is not the school or Kansas right after them coming out and saying, we're not going to play. You know, the Ivy League doesn't have to sort of make that jurisdiction. This is something that should be much more together. This is something that doesn't have sort of the ability or the agility, as Coach K said specifically, to make these sorts of decisions, because it's all done in committees. It's not done on a big overarching wide net basis. This is something that individual conferences deal with, individual schools deal with, and that lack of continuity has been a big problem. And we're seeing it even now in the college basketball season. You know, I look at an example of Stanford. Stanford has been crashing in North Carolina for the last week because they're not allowed to go back to Santa Clara County because of the COVID restrictions that are there, right? Stanford, while they're out here, they're trying to schedule games. They're trying to fill some of the non-conference spots that they lost. But because of the differences in testing protocol between the Pac-12 and other conferences, they're not able to really do that. And so when you have those sorts of discrepancies, obviously they're troublesome and irksome on a game scheduling perspective, but much more so from what Coach K is talking about on the grander spectrum of college basketball even happening this year and somehow getting us to a point where we can still have an NCAA tournament. It's a much bigger issue, and the void of central leadership is really showing up.
Brendan, take us through the triangle here real quick. Carolina obviously loses at Iowa the other night. Knock on wood, they seem to be okay. Duke seems to be okay. NC State is a week into their pause, if you will, tomorrow, since they started their pause. I think it was last Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, maybe Saturday. Nonetheless, the Wolfpack is one of four schools. Louisville has just come off of theirs. That leaves Wake Forest and Virginia, I think, still on pause in the ACC. What's the feeling around NC State as to when they might get back? I think Steve Forbes announced the other night in Winston-Salem on his radio show that a December 21 game has now been taken off the books, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, there's all sorts of moving pieces here before we ever get to the holiday.
Yeah, you know, and is this not exactly what we were told was going to happen, you know, 4 or 5 months ago? So the fact that it's actually coming to pass to me is just an indictment. But on a smaller level, you talk about NC State. Again, it's not just the matter of, okay, we had some issues and now we're going to take a 2-week pause and then we're going to come back and everything is going to be golden. That's not how this works. It's not that simple. As we've seen from college football, you know, Trevor Lawrence can tell you it takes a little bit of time to get back up and running and getting back to optimal sort of capacity. So I think that's going to be the case for NC State. And really, with so many ACC schools already having to not just postpone games, but to go on a full pause, I think this is something that the conference really needs to look at and say, okay, is there a way that we can potentially alter or reshape the schedule in some way? Because when the revamped ACC schedule was released, obviously, as everyone saw, it relatively looks like a normal schedule would. There isn't a ton of time baked into that schedule for makeup games, postponed games, whatever. Now that you're seeing some of these things come to pass before we've even gotten to Christmas at so many different places and not all in the same geographical proximity, you know, Wake Forest, NC State, Virginia, you know, it's all over the place. And so I just think that, you know, as far as NC State specifically, it's going to take time when they get back for this to actually happen. You know, think about whether what we're doing right now is the best way for us to get to March, because that's the ultimate goal when we're having any of these discussions.
All right, before I let you go, I'm going to ask you a real quick football question. Duke and North Carolina, since it's right there in your backyard and you cover it, will they sweep or get swept? I'm not going to allow you to split, all right? More likely to sweep or get swept this weekend?
Get swept.
Get swept, all
right. Tough to say, but wow. Get swept. You know, I, you know what? And here, I'll say this, because I think, you know, at least from UNC, you know, I think back to that Notre Dame game, and I think back to the Wake Forest game, and I think back to the way that UNC's offense, we all know, can put up points with anybody in the country. But I think still the questions about the defense and the ability to get stops, especially timely stops, is very legitimate. And also, you know, my faith in Duke football probably couldn't be lower at this point. So I think that I have to sort of ride with the Blue Devils there. And you know, Derek King is going to put up some numbers, I'm afraid.
All right. Listen, always good talking with you.
All right.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate
Thanks, Brendan.
You.
Appreciate it. You bet. Brendan Marks, you can read his work in The Athletic. Well done. Excellent. On all fronts, especially when it comes to the triangle teams in the ACC.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
We're not done with outstanding guests, because he's back with us as he normally does on a Friday. Roddy Jones joins us. Roddy, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. I am good. And look, before we get started, I don't like to stick my nose in other people's business, but Pack, you got to apologize to Gina Conte. You are a broadcaster. You do 6 hours of radio a day. You count, and that free throw thing, like, that's on you, Pack. You got to apologize. You got to own it. You got to own it.
I am not a broadcaster. I am a host. There's a big difference. West Durham is a broadcaster, right? There's a big difference. You know what? I don't have any charts. I don't carry around colored pencils and markers. I'm not worried about spotters. I don't have any of that nonsense. Don't need it. Don't want it. Not looking for it. So there will be no apologies, and I don't believe in curses or jinx. You either make the play or you don't. And I can't wait for Gina to be back, because she was tremendous on the show yesterday. But it got nothing to do with somebody dropping a ball, missing a free throw, making a turnover, turning out the lights or celebrating in front of a band. I got nothing to do with any of that stuff. Nothing. Zero. So there'd be no apologies. Zero.
Pack, I've seen the notepad, though. The notepad could be a board. Like, that could be one of those chart board things. Like, you do a great job on
I keep notes. Every show I've ever done since day one at WFNZ 20-some-odd years ago, I can go back and tell you what I talked about on December the 11th, 1997. I could break it all down for you. And one of these days, there's going to be a book written when I have some free time. And it's going to be a classic. But I am not apologizing, and I'm not a broadcaster. So if I tell you, hey, you know what? I'm going to give you a since dirt stat, deal with it. But no apologies. None.
Okay.
All Zero.
Right. All right. I'm on your side on this one, Wes.
Doesn't matter.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, he could care less.
I don't even care.
The whole point of the issue. And I know. Don't even care. Exactly.
I do not.
All right. I want to start with last night. Number one, Pittsburgh gets the win. Congratulations to Pat Narduzzi. But, Roddy, I didn't see Vincent Davis running for nearly 250 in that ballgame last night.
No, I didn't either. And I think it's a testament to Pitt, obviously. Georgia Tech had some busts in the run game, obviously, as well, that Pitt was able to take advantage of. We've been asking for the better part of the last two seasons, when's Pitt going to be able to run the football? And they finally explode against the Jackets for over 300 yards rushing. Vincent Davis has a lit day where he's able to go almost to 250. It was a great performance by Pitt. And honestly, Pitt's going to go back and watch the film and think, man, we left a lot on the table. Kenny Pickett missed a couple of wide open guys down the field on some double moves. So it was a close game down the stretch, but it didn't necessarily have to be if Pitt had hit some of those plays down the field. It was chippy, though. You guys have kind of talked about it. It was chippy. It was kind of fun to see two teams that really embody the personality of their head coaches, because Pat Narduzzi's teams do not back down to anybody, and Jeff Collins' team was getting out there and saying, hey, look, you're not going to disrespect us on our home field.
I was encouraged by that. I know that sounds crazy, but given the grind of a year, two teams that are just kind of looking to get to the finish line and improve, obviously, there was some passion last night. That wasn't one of those, ole, let's just kind of get through this thing and this game's over, nobody really cares, the lights just went out, okay, great. Man, they got after it. It kind of felt like there was a lot at stake in this game, given the chippiness and given the fact that we had the infamous handshake at the end of the game. That game had some juice to it for a Thursday night with two teams that you're not going to see in an ACC championship game.
Yeah, it absolutely did. And Georgia Tech was coming off a short week as well. Like, those short weeks are tough. They're tough turnarounds, and they were physical. They didn't back down. And I agree with you, Pack. Like, I think when you get that on a Thursday night, it makes it more compelling. And look, I am here for any chippiness between anybody and Pat Narduzzi and Jeff Collins, for that matter, because Pat Narduzzi is certainly going to lean into it. Like, he is not going to back down from any chippiness with anybody. So when you get that in the handshake, like, he was direct about it in the press conference saying that he doesn't know. As I said on Twitter last night, you got to put this one away for the talking season when you're talking about, all right, which coach are you taking in a cage match in the ACC? Just know that Jeff Collins and Pat Narduzzi are not getting put on the same team if you go with the tag team format. You're going to have to pair Pat Narduzzi and Jeff Collins with separate people, because when they have the opportunity, they're going to go at each other after what we saw yesterday.
Classic.
As a guy who went to four bowl games in 4 years at Georgia Tech, and five if you count the red shirt, BC electing to forego postseason, I don't think you're surprised, are you?
I'm not. And I think after you heard the statement from Pat Kraft and the statement from Jeff Hafley about just the grind that these guys have gone through and the fact that they haven't seen their families in forever, you know, when they've been to places where their families could attend games, there was a barrier between them and their families. So, like, these guys haven't even hugged their moms in who knows how long. So I think that statement makes it not surprising. And also, in a normal year, I think there's a lot of guys on a football team that would opt to go home and have a normal Christmas break rather than go to a ball game. Unless it's one of the biggest ball games, unless you're playing on a stage that is one of the premier stages, if you pull the team in a normal year and say, hey, look, you got 15 practices and you can play in a bowl game in late December, or we can let you go home like a normal student, see your family, and go enjoy life for a little bit. In a normal year, a lot of guys would pick the enjoy life part. And especially in a year like this, where you've had the grind of COVID, you've had obviously the grind of the season, and you haven't been able to have that interaction with family and friends, it's even more important. So I commend what they did. I commend what Mike Krzyzewski is doing with Duke basketball, saying, hey, look, guys, go home. We're not going to reschedule these non-conference games. Recharge a little bit, come back, and let's grind. Like, I feel like that is really putting the student athlete first and foremost when it comes to the performance on the field and when it comes to the mental health off the field.
Roddy, the best ACC football matchup we could get this year. We've seen it once. Clemson-Notre Dame will get it next week, hopefully, God willing, here in Charlotte. The second best matchup you can get in the ACC is going to happen tomorrow, and that's Miami and North Carolina. Two explosive offenses. You're going to see some colors tomorrow in terms of the uni combinations on both sides, but that's beside the point. The talent is what's most important. This is a really, really good and important game, not only within the ACC, but also within the bowl structure.
Completely agree. This could be an Orange Bowl play-in game, essentially, if both Clemson and Notre Dame go to the college football playoff. And it's a fascinating matchup. The thing that I think North Carolina is going to have to overcome to win the game is the ability to run the football. If you look at their four worst performances of the year, it's been their four worst rushing performances as well. The losses against Florida State and Virginia, the close game against Boston College, and then obviously the loss to Notre Dame are the four teams that they have had the toughest time rushing the ball against. All of those teams are in the top part of the league in rush defense, as is Miami. So Miami's defense, and particularly that front, is going to have to do a great job containing the run game. But North Carolina is going to have to figure out both how to get the run game going and how to stay committed to it if it's not going their way early in the game, because I think they've gotten away from it some. You look at the Florida State game in particular, where I think they got away from it some. So the thing that I think North Carolina has going for it and that Miami's going to have to contend with are the two backs. And Miami likes to play some man-to-man coverage. If you can get those backs matched up against the linebackers, that's certainly a mismatch in favor of North Carolina. Javonte Williams and Michael Carter have had incredible years. So for Miami, it's going to be stopping those backs, both in the run game and the pass game. But I'm really excited about this. It's not often you get 3-4 in the conference in a matchup 1 week and then 1-2 in the matchup the very next week.
Roddy, I want to go back to Miami here for a moment, because we watched the Canes kind of, even though they won the ball game, we watched NC State make some plays in the pass game against them. And certainly taking nothing away from Bailey Hockman and Amezi and Devin Carter and those guys, Carolina's got more weapons and arguably the better guys slinging it. So is Miami got to win the game in the front seven tomorrow? Because I'm not sure if this gets into, you know, a pass game situation, Miami can win this contest. I'm just curious as to how that part of it sets up for what Miami's trying to do defensively.
Well, the big plays are certainly going to be a part of it. I think that when you look at Miami's secondary against NC State's wide receiving core, NC State's so big that was a little bit different than the way that North Carolina's made up. North Carolina's going to beat you with speed and skill with the jump balls rather than just out-muscling you like Emeka Emezi and Devin Carter do. So it is going to be a little bit different. But again, it comes back to stopping the run. This North Carolina offense is RPO-based. And if they're not able to run the football, then they have to get away from that some and just try and throw it over your head. So then it becomes like, can we not give up big plays? But I think that's the case on both sides. UNC is very young in the secondary. So can Mike Harley go off? Can D. Wiggins go off? Can you get Mark Pope down the field some, or Brevin Jordan and those tight ends? If Miami's able to stop the run, then it's going to become who's hitting big plays down the field? Because Miami's run game was better against Duke, but really since the first part of that season, it has not been overly consistent. So that's kind of the way I see it going. If the run game becomes a non-factor for both teams, then it's about explosive plays.
We talked about the chippiness of the game last night with Pitt and Georgia Tech. I'm sensing tomorrow night in Blacksburg, there will be some of that and times 100, right? You just get a sense. Here's Virginia. They got the belt. They got the cup from a year ago. First time in forever. They've won four in a row. They got the healthy quarterback. They kind of like where life is right now. Here's Virginia Tech, 0 for November, beat last week by Clemson, no shame in that. And now here they come to Blacksburg. The Hoos haven't won there since 98, And there just seems to be a lot riding for Virginia Tech tomorrow night. This game will have some electricity in it. Guarantee you, right? No brainer.
It absolutely will, because I think Virginia's going to walk in there with their chest puffed out. They've got the Commonwealth Cup. They're going to walk in there knowing that they can win that football game and believing that they should. So Virginia Tech is going to have to be physical. They're going to have to get after Virginia a little bit and really contain Brennan Armstrong. I mean, he's become one of the most exciting players in the ACC to watch. And then on the defensive side of, or on the other side of the football, Virginia Tech's got to run the ball. Their offensive line has not been as good as they were early in the season. They have not run the ball as well as they have early in the season. Now, part of that's they've played the better run defenses in the league and towards the second half of the season. But Virginia's one of those. Virginia's fourth in the conference in rush defense, where their pass defense is kind of where they've been susceptible. So can Virginia Tech take advantage of this secondary for Virginia that's been depleted by injuries? Noah Taylor, it looks like he's going to play, but he and Charles Snowden were both out last week. Obviously, Charles Snowden done for the year. So can Virginia Tech take advantage in the pass game, especially if they're not able to run the football? Virginia's been really good against the run, against just about everybody. But the belief factor, I think, is on Virginia's side. They've got the Commonwealth Cup. They're riding high. They're feeling great with all those wins. And there's a feeling in Blacksburg. I don't know which way this thing is going to go, because I think in Blacksburg, they're going to have a little bit of desperation to get this win and finish out the season, not only with a win over your rival and reestablishing dominance in the state, but also a win just to feel good after losing four straight.
Last thing from us here. Our game tomorrow at noon is Wake and Louisville. Scott Satterfield hinted to us in our visit with him yesterday that each time he and Dave Clawson have matched wits, and it's just not exclusive to last year, it's been high scoring. Pack and I discussed the turnover variable earlier in the show. Any reason to believe that we don't get an offensive game tomorrow?
No, I don't think so. I think you should fully expect an offensive explosion. Neither one of these defenses has been overly dominant this season. Wake has been particularly susceptible to the big plays because of the injuries that they've had, particularly at safety, although it looks like they're going to get Luke Masterson back. So I think this will be a high-scoring game. The fact that Tutu Atwell is not playing in this game due to injury and then the declaration that he's going to go pro – could be a big hit for Louisville, but Braden Smith's going to slot into that role, and I think he'll do a nice job. Marshawn Ford, I would expect him to be a little bit more involved in the pass game. He's usually catches a couple of passes a game, usually towards the red zone. I think Louisville's going to get him a little bit more involved, and it's going to come down to the quarterback play. You know, Sam Hartman hasn't thrown an interception all year. North Carolina had a couple of opportunities but weren't able to bring the ball in. So it's going to come down to the quarterback play. If Malik Cunningham cannot turn the ball over, which has been a struggle for Louisville as a whole this year, then I think Louisville's going to have a pretty good shot to win it. If not, then it's going to be all Wake Forest, because Wake Forest has been fantastic at not turning the ball over. And on the other side, Louisville's been one of the worst in the entire country. You guys talked about it earlier. So it's really simple, and it's kind of a cop-out to say, hey, it's going to come down to the turnovers. But I really feel like this one could, because one team has been great at it and the other team has been really, really bad.
How about the one, real quick, how about the 1-2 with Duke, Florida State? The edge goes to whom?
Well, we haven't seen Florida State in so long that I'm not exactly sure. I would say Florida State, just because, like I said just a second ago, like turnovers, we've seen a trend with Duke turnover-wise. They've turned the ball over five times in each of the past two games. I don't see that. I don't see that being cured in a week. So I'm going to go with Florida State. That the not only the want to factor, but also the edge goes to them, just because Duke's shown us they do not value the football very much on the Duke Blue Devils team. So I think Florida State is the one to go with in this one.
All right,
Roddy Jones. I want to say Friday staple, but we all know he's just filling in for Katie George, right, Pack?
Well, the coveted invite, I mean, 9:30 on Fridays has always been the coveted invite spot. And she couldn't join us today because she's traveling. She's a very, very talented and busy lady. So Roddy's always with us on Friday. So it worked out perfecto.
But we can say hello to JC and Adri, who are watching the show.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. They are watching the show. Absolutely. And I think I think the fact that I'm slotting into Katie's spot, I think that makes me like the secondary invite or maybe the begrudging invite.
Just stay away from that. Stay away from that. No, don't try. Do not try to steal any limelight there. There's only one.
I'm not trying to steal limelight. I'm just clarifying.
Hear me out. I'm trying to help you. There's only one, and let me emphasize, only one coveted invite. Only one.
That's right.
There's no secondary. There's no third. There's only one coveted.
Okay.
And don't jinx anything tomorrow, either one of you. You hear me? Neither one of you jinx anything tomorrow during the broadcast.
Oh, don't worry. No, we won't. We won't. No.
We won't until Wes says that Sam Bradford hasn't thrown an interception all season. So then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, Wake's only turned it over one time. I don't want to come back here Monday and Wake's kicking it around looking like Duke. If that happens, I'm blaming both of you.
Yeah, we'll offer a public apology.
Thank you, Roddy.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, final segment of the last show this week. And fun show today. They're all fun. And guests are awesome. And Wes, I just hope we get games, right? I say it every Friday that, you know, head on a swivel, final tests come in, and I don't want any cancellations on game day. I don't want anything getting kicked to the curb. We just want good football and basketball, and that's exactly what we get with the Bojangles menu.
There you go. Roll it. Just like that. We're going to give you the weekend menu. It's brought to you by our friends at Bojangles. And we just told you we'll start tomorrow with a football triple header, Wake Forest, Louisville at noon, Duke, Florida State at 4, and then the 102nd Commonwealth Cup game at 8 o'clock tomorrow night from Lane Stadium in Blacksburg with the Hokies and the Cavaliers, and a triple dip of women's basketball on Sunday. Take you to venues like Pittsburgh, Boston College, and Louisville for our coverage of ACC Women's Hoop. And that's all brought to you by Bojangles. So there you go. Don't forget you can subscribe to the podcast as well, wherever you download your podcast. They come in nice one-hour increments, Pack. Make it easy to listen to, by the way. So there you go. Oh, I may have lost the fearless leader here, here on the final segment of the show. But nonetheless, we have got plenty for you this weekend. We're looking forward to a big weekend of football. Pittsburgh a winner last night over Georgia Tech. Three games tomorrow on our network. Plus, you've got other ball games setting up as well, and we get ready for a big weekend. Carolina-Miami tomorrow, 3:30 on ABC. So look forward to all of our football coverage. By the way, before we get away on this Friday afternoon, we have a gentleman who is going to be on loan to other programs on the ESPN family of networks who's helped us quite a bit here in our 277 shows. So our best to Lewis Neal, who has worked with us almost since day one, maybe even before day one. Lewis has been an integral part of what we do on this program, and we wish him well as he moves on to other projects within the ESPN family of networks, but he's been great for us. All these great guests you see on our show who join us in this new way we do guests on Packer and Durham, well, that's been the good handiwork of Lewis Neal. So we appreciate his tremendous efforts daily with Packer and Durham, and we wish him well. And we hope it's on loan, Lewis. We hope it's not permanent. We hope you come back to come back here to the old Packer and Durham homestead in your ESPN career. But thank you for all your good hard work on this show. We're very grateful for the efforts of Lewis Neal as he moves on to other things. We're not happy about it, but we're team players, Pack. Above all else, we're team players.
Well, I will just tell Lewis this. He did a great job, and anytime he needs some farm-rich meatballs, I'm his guy, right? Take care of the family during this holiday season coming up, but we will miss him. He has done a great, great job for us, but he's still part of the ESPN family, so that's all a good thing.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.